Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Kramerica. If you want to make friends, I'm just trying to make you some money. My job is not just to entertain, but to educate and teach you, so call me at 1-800-743-CBC or tweet me at Jim Cramer. Who are these people who keep saying stocks are too expensive? If they're so pricey, why the heck do we keep seeing such large takeovers that Wall Street adores, at least judging by the action in the stock price of the acquirer? When the buyer's shares go higher, that tells you the market approves of the deal. It's one of the main reasons why all three major averages had record closes today. Dow gaining 191 points, S&P jumping 0.75%, NASDAQ pulling 0.32%. Sometimes these deals make so much sense that you got to wonder why they took so darn long. Why an online discount broker, Robinhood, eliminated commissions on trading. Well, they're going to make their money on credit balances, meaning your assets. That forced the rest of the industry to follow suit. And because the others made a lot of money from commissions, their stocks were clocked. But Charles Schwab, with $3.8 trillion in assets under management, took advantage of the sad state of the industry, swooping in to buy competitor TD Ameritrade for the relatively low price of $26 billion. And voila, now they have $5 trillion under their belts.
House of pleasure.
I remember Tom and Goldman Sachs debated buying little Charles Schwab. Look out, $78 billion Goldman. Schwab's less than $20 billion from you, and it's now gaining on you. Although I have to wonder if Schwab doesn't really have, at this point, a better business model for the future, particularly for those millennials, than Goldman right now. Unless the Apple credit card turns out to be huge, Goldman has some real catching up to do. It could double its assets under management and still not come close to the new Schwab. Lots of critics sneered when they saw how much LVMH, the parent of Louis Vuitton and Moet Hennessy, had to pay for Tiffany, $16 billion, or $135 a share. Given that the stock was at $90 a little over a month ago. But if that was such a bad deal, why has LVMH stock roared higher? Tiffany's had some pretty darn horrible numbers worldwide. I think they simply didn't understand the new retail world that's defined by personalization and high touch. For years, the jewelry chain has missed numbers, frequently blaming the strong dollar, which hurts tourism. At one time, they even blamed Trump for lower traffic after the election. I mean, oh, who knows? They always had something. But you know what? You take something like the riots in Hong Kong. That should hurt companies. It hurt Estee Lauder. You see them complain? No, they sell a ton of expensive cosmetics in Hong Kong. They didn't use an excuse. They may have hurt sales, but Estee Lauder is such a well-run business worldwide that it didn't matter. So it's not just that if you're in the premium category, like Estee, like Tiffany, come on. One does well, the other one doesn't, both EL and then LVMH. Understand high touch. The need to maintain a close connection to your customers. Now, Tiffany's going to learn that, too. I am sure LVMH gets it because this company's been a marquee account for Salesforce.com. You know, they were lauded at Dreamforce last week by Mark Benioff before this deal. He's the co-CEO and founder. The salespeople seem to know everything about you when you shop at one of their stores. Tiffany, on the other hand, they seem to draw a blank when you walk in. When you're shelling out a lot of money for high-end jewelry, you want the people who work there to recognize you, remember your preferences, suggest ideas. I bet their numbers will soar after this takeover closes. Soar! Even in takeovers where the target surge has surged higher, the acquired stocks are rewarded. Novartis. NVS. It snapped up Medicine's company for $9.7 billion this weekend. They're paying a price that's 340% higher than where Medicine's was at the beginning of the year. And what happens? The Novartis stock actually rallies a bit. Why? Because they're buying a twice-a-year injection that lowers your cholesterol. The current standard of care requires you to get two shots a month. Fits in perfectly with Novartis' considerable heart franchise. I think the lower the cholesterol, we're going to find out, fewer the heart attacks, the more that Novartis is going to look like a genius for buying this. All right, now, if acquirers are being rewarded for snapping up other companies, that tells me that these stocks may be a lot cheaper than you think, and many stocks may be cheaper. And once you start seeing this kind of action, other businesses are encouraged to make deals too. So you can expect more mergers going forward. It's axiomatic, people. It will happen. What industries are likely to have more activity? First, yes, is retail. We have way too many stores in this country. You hear it over and over again. We've seen a major bifurcation in the industry with haves thriving and the have-nots falling apart. Now, that doesn't mean losers like Kohl's, Gap, or Macy's will get bids. They're cheap and profitable. Look, my channel trust owns Kohl's. Okay, I'm dumb. But I don't know if anyone can figure out how to reverse their fortunes. But there are some underperforming chains that represent attractive opportunities here. I cannot believe how cheap Foot Locker is right now, even though it had terrific same-store sales. I know the Nordstrom brothers do not want to sell, but that quarter wasn't even given the respect it deserves, seeing as the company now is the thriving business online and off-price, and that's what you know I care about. Oh, by the way, don't you give up on Bed Bath & Beyond. Not with that new management. No way. Second, there are way too many software companies in cybersecurity, call center, data mining. Splunk just reported a fantastic quarter. Stock's up again today. It could be a consolidator. Should New Relic, CyberArk, Fortinet, CrowdStrike, FireEye, Zendesk, RingCentral, how can I help you, Five9, all be independent? I don't think so. Oh, and here goes Palo Alto slouching back towards Bethlehem here with a big run after big run because of a weaker than expected quarter. Sorry, that random Joan Didion, but I loved her. Okay, third, there are tons of high quality biotechs out there with stocks that should be much higher. I mean, how does BioMarin really? We had just JB on me last week. How does that, with a solid business and an amazing pipeline, how does that stay independent? Hey, listen, if Biogen's Alzheimer's drug is as promising as it seems, then it's worth a lot more than its current $54 billion valuation. Look at how well AbbVie and Bristol Myers have done since their biotech deals. More on Bristol Myers later, and I still regard some of Allergan as biotech. Fourth, we have about 1,000 more banks than we need. Oh, maybe 2,000. I know a lot of that's because the regulators don't want to let any of the big dogs become even larger than they are. But banks with terrific technology can deliver spectacular results if they buy banks with inferior tech. Fifth, same goes for financial tech. Now, we have too many payments companies. If Square can't get its stock price moving again, hey, what a natural, right? Six, nothing needs more consolidation than the online food delivery business. I think Uber would explode higher if it sold Uber Eats to Grubhub. And it would pay off for Grubhub, too. Certainly, it's better than the current strategy. Or, strategy, should put the quote marks there. Seventh, semiconductor mergers tend to be problematic because most of them need Chinese approval. If NVIDIA is ever allowed to finish buying Mellanox, that could take up the numbers dramatically. What did I tell you about NVIDIA? It's up again today. What did I tell you? You saw Jensen Huang last week. How brilliant. How brilliant is that man? By the way, everyone offline says, well, there's Jensen and then there's everybody else. You say that about Bezos. If China, they still do. If China's willing to play ball, it would make a ton of sense for NXP Semi, Qorvo, Skyworks. I don't know. Maybe they all come together. Boy, that would be fabulous. These potential mergers don't all have the beautiful synergy of Schwab Ameritrade, where the combined company can cut its ad budget, reduce its tech spending, and lay off an immense number of people. Not good for people who work there, but great for the shareholders. They don't necessarily have the elegance of marrying LVMH's sophisticated tech and touch with Tiffany's brand name. You don't always get a whole new drug pipeline for $9 billion like the Martins did with Medicines Company. But my point stands. Bottom line, some companies may be too big to be acquired, but there are thousands that aren't. And after today, I'm tired of hearing how expensive these stocks are. If they were so darn expensive, we wouldn't be seeing all of these deals. Despite all the grumbling about overvaluation, I think it is a very, 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 very good sign. Maria in Michigan. Maria!
Jim, Maria from Detroit here. I wanted to get your take on eBay. I've had eBay for a few years now, and with the StubHub, selling off StubHub, I want to know what I should do with it.
Yeah, you want to hold on. I mean, it's going to be a slow grind. There isn't a lot of growth that I like. I prefer PayPal, which is the other part of it. But it will work its way higher. I actually think that's okay. It'll work its way higher as I see some stocks working their way higher while I'm doing the show, including this Ameritrade. What a deal that was for shareholders. How about Matt in Texas? Matt.
Hey, booyah, Master Kramer-san.
Booyah.
I'm a retired boomer, and I've been in the markets about 30 years or so, and I'm still a grasshopper next to you. I'd love to take some profits from the younger generation, though. So I'm talking about a stock, RVLV. Revolve.
Okay, I think
I bought 50 shares at 35, and I averaged it down to 100 shares to 28. And it's possible. I'm in a position to where I could average 200 down to 23.
I would do it. It's an e-commerce fashion company. It fell out of favor. A lot of these companies that weren't making a lot of money or losing money. But these guys are okay. They're going to make 50 cents. I think it's a buy. I think it's actually turning right here, too. I would buy now. Let's go to Tom in New York. Tom.
Hey, booyah, Kramer.
Booyah.
I've got a CD coming due pretty soon, and I want to invest in some gold bullion. What's the best place to buy it at spot?
Okay, well, I'm going to give you my sense on gold, just so you know, is that I like the GLD. Historically, I have said that people who buy gold should keep it in a deposit box. A lot of times, it's better keep it in a deposit box in another country, too, by the way, just for pure security. Because remember, it is an insurance program. That's how I view it, and you can't be insured well enough. All right, after today, I am tired I am tired of hearing that stocks are too expensive. These deals are a very, very good sign. And yes, if the market goes down tomorrow and you want to tweet me and yell at me, here's what I have to say. I like Tesla. I like Tesla. Oh, man, buddy, tonight, with news that Bristol Myers has completed its acquisition of Celgene, what should your next move be? I'm talking to the CEO. And PVH just reported after the close, in the midst of a global trade conflict, can the stock stay in fashion on the Wall Street runway? And get this, I've got the exclusive with former DuPont CEO Ellen Coleman taking the reins of a 3D printing startup worth over $2.5 billion. Wow. Hey, by the way, I also get the outgoing CEO. Who stay on? Stay with Cramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on Twitter. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Tweets. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
Last week, the biggest merger of the year was finally consummated when an old-school drug company and uber-Cramer fave Bristol Myers bought a down-and-out biotech, Celgene, for $74 billion in cash and stock. You know, I've been bullish about this deal ever since it was announced back in January, and we got a chance to speak to the CEOs of both companies, and it's already been a big winner. The new Bristol Myers is a pharmaceutical colossus with a phenomenal cancer immunotherapy franchise. Oh, and if that weren't enough, we got something very promising from clinical trial data for Opdivo. That's their Bristol's biggest anti-cancer drug. It's been developed by competition from Merck's Keytruda. That's one reason the stock's been rallying hard of late. I got to find out more about this. Let's take a closer look with Giovanni Caforio. He's the chairman and CEO of Bristol Myers Squibb. Learn more about what the future holds for his combined company. Dr. Caforio, welcome back to Mad Money. Good to see you, Giovanni. Have a seat.
Thank you, Jim.
First, congratulations. This is just a remarkable achievement by you. A lot of people felt, I don't know if it could be done. Well, it clearly is. So now give us what the new Bristol Myers looks like.
Well, Jim, first of all, thanks for having me.
Of course.
It's a great time for us at a really important moment. The new Bristol Myers Squibb is a leading biopharma company that can transform the lives of even more patients through science. We have the number one cancer company in the world and leading franchises in cardiovascular medicines and autoimmune disease. A lot of really good things have happened this year. And in every one of our franchises, we have leading brands, growing businesses. We're working on 7 new medicines to launch. You may remember when we last got together, I mentioned 6 launches.
Yes.
Where 2 medicines have been approved by the FDA and a 7th one had positive data. We're getting ready to launch that as well. A great pipeline, great people. This is a growth company and very well positioned to succeed.
Now, it's not just enough that you give us a stock that has 3% yield and it's got a good balance sheet. You're able to buy back a lot of stock. But you've also given us what's known as the Bristol Myers Squibb CVRs. Now, that's a kind of a term of art. But this is a great opportunity for someone, particularly younger people, to bet on the future.
Well, the CVR really is a payment of $9 per CVR, right, which we will make if 3 medicines are approved. The good thing is we are on track. It is something we've always said we'll be happy to pay, and we're on track with those 3 medicines.
Including some that could have gigantic, gigantic markets.
Well, you know, there are multiple opportunities in the pipeline.
Right.
The first is our leading position in cell therapy,
right,
with CAR-T. In just 2 weeks, we're going to go to the American Society of Hematology conference. There we have a lot of data. We have phase 3 data for one of our CAR-T programs.
Okay, that could be big, because ASH is where a lot, that's this great conference.
That's going to be a great conference for us.
Really?
And we're going to be filing that medicine by the end of the year. And it's just one of several products in our pipeline, which is really exciting.
Now, the thing that you're not getting nearly enough credit for, and I don't really get it because it's a wonder drug, is Eliquis. I mean, this one has taken share every single day. Tell us about it, because it's gigantic.
Well, it's a very important product, and I'm very proud of what the teams have done. So Eliquis is a medicine that is used in patients with a disease called atrial fibrillation. It prevents stroke. It has a best-in-class profile. It has become the leading agent in the world. In the third quarter, we had sales of almost $2 billion with over 20% growth.
People don't talk about it.
So there's 3 opportunities to continue to grow Eliquis. The first one is continue to gain market share. We've done it extraordinarily right. Well. The second one is that many patients are diagnosed. They're not yet treated.
Right.
And the third opportunity is there are many patients that have not yet been diagnosed. In fact, we just announced a partnership with Fitbit because through technology, we think we can increase the number of patients that get diagnosed early with atrial fibrillation. There's three opportunities to continue to grow Eliquis. I'm really confident we're going to do a really good job with that.
I hope you do a deal with Apple, too, the Apple Watch. That'd be good. You know what's interesting about this Eliquis? I remember when my father first got AFib, and people talked about it. There's this one drug, and none of the drugs will be used. Is it possible this could have 100% share when people see outcomes?
Oh, it's clearly continuing to, to gain 100% share. And it's the leading agent in the world, and it's the first oral anticoagulant in the U.S. The trends are very positive because the profile is the best profile in the class.
All right, I didn't want to spend too much time on it, but I thought it was important because we spent so much time talking about Revlimid and Opdivo. Now, Opdivo had some great kind of lost in the shuffle data. When people felt like it was key true to game, set, match, you've insisted to me that's not the case.
Well, Opdivo had really important data this year. Another important progress we've made. Two phase three studies in first-line lung cancer for Opdivo in combination with Yervoy, positive overall survival. So I'm really happy we're going to have a role to play in first-line lung cancer. Opdivo is a growth franchise, and the next frontier for growth is the early stage of cancer, what we call adjuvant. There we have a very broad program. If you start treating cancer earlier, there's a real opportunity to make a difference for patients, and we're very well positioned there. So Opdivo is a growth franchise, and very good things happened this year.
All right. Now, we were, you and I both know Bob Eugen. When Bob Eugen ran unsuccessfully for Senate, there was a series of ads that came out that said that he gouged, that price gouging, that Celgene charged too much for Revlimid. What's your view about pricing for drugs, what the politicians can do, and also end-of-life drugs, which I do think that there may be something a rational economist may not agree with, say, a grieving kid?
Well, let me say, first of all, we take a very responsible approach with pricing at Bristol-Myers Squibb. We've done it in the past. We do it today. We'll do it in the future. I think the issue of drug pricing is a really important topic. And from our perspective, there is a real need for policy changes because medicines are important only when they reach patients. And there are issues with affordability in the U.S. because of benefit design issues. And so from my perspective, we need to all be working together. We as a leading company are actively working with members of the administration. We work with our peers at pharma because I think it's important to promote policy solutions that improve the affordability for patients. That's the real issue today in the U.S.
Okay, now let's talk patent cliff for a second. I remember the Plavix patent cliff negotiated well by Bristol. The Avapro negotiated well. People are so concerned that you bought a company, Revlimid, for Celgene with Revlimid, that when the patent cliff goes, it's going to take, it will be revealed that even though you made short-term money, you didn't make long-term money. This company is uniquely able to handle patent cliffs. Will the same thing happen with Revlimid?
Well, that's the nature of our business. And as you've said, we've done it well before.
Oh, yeah.
Renewing our portfolio is really the rationale for the acquisition of Celgene. When you think about the new Bristol-Myers Squibb, we will be much better positioned in the second half of the decade to renew our portfolio when some of the losses of exclusivity happen. We have a broader pipeline, a deeper pipeline. We have seven medicines that we're working on launching. We have over 50 medicines in phase one and phase two. We are much better positioned to renew our portfolio through these losses of exclusivity than we were before. It was the rationale of the deal.
Right.
I'm actually even more confident today
than when we saw
than we were when we announced
11 months
the
ago.
Deal
That's
because
fantastic.
Of the developments of this year.
All right, one last one that has always dogged the company, Celgene, that we had high hopes for, that maybe I got too excited about, is ozanimod, which is part of the CVR. When you say things that might be on track, is that drug sounded so big. It sounded like it could be one of the great blockbusters of all time.
Well, it's one of the important products in our pipeline.
Right?
And as you know, it's been filed with the FDA and regulatory authorities in Europe. We expect an approval by the FDA in March. And that's in multiple sclerosis. That's just the first indication. Next year, we'll have data from the phase three program in ulcerative colitis, which is a big opportunity, big area of unmet need for patients. It's really a good example of the many growth opportunities of Bristol-Myers Squibb. As I mentioned at the beginning, we are very well positioned for growth. And I'm feeling more optimistic about the new company than I was when I last came to see you because of all the good things that have happened this year.
And that's something, because you're very understated and you're not a hype artist. You've been very even about this. This is the most excited I've heard from you, and I do not blame you one bit, because you steer one inexpensive, great franchise. Thank you so much to Dr. Giovanni Caforio. He's the chairman and CEO of Bristol-Myers Squibb at $56. This is the kind of thing you can buy and put away. Mad Money's back in. Gotten some real mixed signals from retail this past earnings season. Some chains are doing very well. Some chains are doing very badly. For example, apparel sold terribly at Kohl's. Sold great at Target. I've been telling you not to extrapolate from any individual retailer, but what about an apparel play with broad exposure to the industry? Take PVH, company behind Calvin Klein and Tommy Hilfiger. This stock's had a real roller coaster of a year, although it finally bottomed to 67 in August, and since then it's been on fire, rallying up to $100 as of today in anticipation of a good quarter. PVH just reported at the close, and a good quarter is exactly what we got. Company posted a solid top and bottom line beat, with management raising their full-year earnings forecast, calling for 4% same-store sales growth on a constant currency basis. Europe, amazing. Tommy, on fire. Calvin Klein, better than feared. I found these numbers pretty darn encouraging. Do not take it from me. Let's take deeper with Manny Chirico. He's the chairman and CEO of PVH. Find out more about the quarter, where his company's headed. Mr. Chirico, welcome back to Mad Money. Good to see you, Manny.
Good to see you.
Thank you. Have a seat. All right, Manny, I'm a little thrown, because to me, these numbers indicate that the market is anything but promotional, and yet you call it competitive and promotional. Mm-hmm. I think the United States is, but your broad panoply of business, clearly you can't call it promotional if you're doing the kind of numbers you're doing with Tommy Hilfiger.
Yeah, well, that's a fair call out, Jim. This North American market, but I would also say we have a big exposure in Greater China.
Right.
And the challenges we're facing there with Hong Kong and the China consumer in general, that's what we were talking about. Our fourth quarter planned holiday, I think we've tried to take a conservative approach to it.
Right.
If the trends that we're seeing continue, we'll do better than we're projecting. But we felt, given the uncertainty that's right out there around so many different things, including six less shopping days between
right
Thanksgiving,
that's a good point.
All these things, we just felt is we had a really strong third quarter. Let's put that through and let's hold tight on the fourth quarter.
How about mall versus non-mall? Mall versus online? Because what I'm seeing is that the promotions in the mall are amazing, but some of the other guys aren't that promotional.
Well, I guess I have to just differ a little
no,
bit.
No, tell me. I think there's...
Your opening segment talked about there's some strength and
right
where there's some weakness. I don't think it's all on mall or off mall, because some of the players you described had tough off mall performance
yeah
as well.
Yeah,
apparel, I have to be honest, apparel has been a segment that's been under more pressure than others. And I think, to be honest, this time last year, such strong business going on in our sector. We all bought into a bit of that trend,
right,
and we've been cleaning inventories, having to deal with margin pressures as it's gone forward, and I think that's finally behind most of us. You can see from our balance sheet, inventories in line, and we're projecting year inventories to be flat to down slightly. So I think we've got the business back in a good place.
Well, that's perfect when you're going right into Christmas. You don't want to hear big discounting. I would use some more cold weather. There was too much warm weather at the beginning.
Yeah, look, I think that really did impact,
yeah,
especially the beginning of the third quarter. We always want to see the season get started, get some really brisk,
right,
cold weather, and get off to a strong start. So that backdrop, clearly you saw some of our key customers have a tough time with it.
Okay, how about Europe? Because it looks like it's extraordinary.
Yeah, our business is just off
How's
the charts
that possible?
There. It's it's the strength of the Tommy Hilfiger brand overall. It's a 2.2 billion euro business there.
Right.
And our Calvin business, which is about half the size, also continued to grow into
right
that. So we've saw, you know, double-digit top-line growth there, continued growth in margins. We feel really good about that business.
All right, I've been letting you go on Heritage, but down 13%, and I know you've got this Izod commercial with that second-rate quarterback from last night.
Had a tough night.
Well, that could hurt your sales, that guy. That guy. We'll take that offline. But do I have to start worrying about Heritage?
Look, I think the Heritage is a reflection of what's going on in mall retailing.
That's right. Okay.
Our key customers, Macy's, Kohl's, JCPenney, that business is struggling. It's about 10 to 12% of our sales, less of our profits. It's a small piece. I think we have it contained that it won't hurt us.
Right.
But this time last year, it was doing so much better. So it's caught up in the whole retail dynamic in North America.
Now, where are you making stuff these days? How much China? How much other places?
Our exposure in China for America is probably between 10 and 15%.
That's pretty low.
As we go into 2020.
So you've been whittling that down the whole time.
Yeah, I think if you go back 4 or 5 years ago, we were closer to 35 to 40%.
Well, so if the president's listening, he's got to be happy.
Well, yeah, look, you went, I've got a strong feeling. I don't think the way to resolve these things is through tariffs. I know the president keeps saying, well, tariffs aren't impacting the economy. But to be fair, the tariffs haven't really hit the economy at this point. I mean, you know, there was those initial tariffs, $50 billion of goods that got taxed at 15%. But now, all of a sudden, in December of this year, tariffs coming through on apparel. We've got about $500 billion of goods that are going to be tariffed. It's going to have an impact on the consumers. I think we could all manage it in the short term with the hope that it would resolve, because you could put pressure on your vendor base to do certain things.
But long term,
it's got to work on both sides. So it clearly will result in higher costs for the consumer, which is not good for the economy.
No, it might hit by the time of the election.
And it's, you know, what the worst part about, Jim, is the uncertainty. I'm sitting here on December 1st, thereabouts, and I don't know what my costs are going to be on January
1st. That's crazy.
Because, you know, is it a 15% tariff, or is it a 25% tariff, or is it a 0% tariff?
Well, this is why the enterprise is hurting. You know, big companies like you, they don't know what to budget.
Right.
You can't put budget. You're not going to go out there and start being a big spender. Mm-hmm. Now, you have taken, I don't want to call it a downsizing, but the restructuring Calvin Klein has done is huge.
Mm-hmm.
Impact?
Look, I think you started to see the impact this quarter. Sales were only up 1%, but earnings were up 7%. Nice. See improved margins. We've moved out of some product categories, and we've also licensed product categories to G3 on the women's side in our jeans business, which I think is going to be a big win for both us and for them. Sell-throughs there have been great. And the overall profitability and margins in North America in this tough environment, Calvin, if you look at our operating margins, they're up about 400
basis points. It's huge for apparel. In the meantime, when the stock got to 70, someone thought the stock was pretty cheap, huh?
Yeah, look, I made a personal decision to invest $10 million in PVH.
You called the bottom, man. You know that. Come on. Didn't you buy it right around there?
I bought it as soon as I could, right after the earnings release that came out.
Did it even come with a 6 handle, or was it in the
7? No, it was a 7.
Well, that's a good buy.
Look, it's just the faith I have in the business model, the diversity of our brands, and our people. I mean, what else is there in this industry? And I think, look, our long-term multiple has historically been between 14 and 17 times earnings. Even with this improvement, we're trading at just slightly above 9 to 10
times. It's crazy.
Understand that because of all the uncertainty.
Right.
People are just don't know what it is. So I personally can take a longer-term view, look at it and say, over the next 18 months, I know we're going to be competitively positioned, and our multiple should move to 13 to 15 to 16 times earnings.
I know Jamie Dimon got incredible credit for when he called the bottom. You didn't get enough because, boy, that was some great buy. But, faith in yourself and your people. That's what did it.
It's only on paper now because I'm not a seller.
No, you're right, but that's all right. I want other people to be buyers. That's what I care about. That's Manny Chico, Chairman and CEO of PVH. We flagged that buy for you when he made it. Boy, that was smart, but it may not be done. Man Money's back after the break. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
A lot of people believe that 3D printing is the future of manufacturing. Although if you look at the action in pure play 3Ds, which you know we have not liked, it's clear the market disagrees because they've been flatlining for years. Turns out this technology is great for making lots of one-off prototypes, but it's a lot less efficient at mass marketing. But what if 3D printing was merely a way station on the road to even better technologies? Consider the case of Carbon. It's a privately held company that's come up with a 3D manufacturing alternative. They call it digital light synthesis. Carbon's platform uses light and heat to transform a pool of liquid resin into an actual product, allowing them to create finished products at mass scale. That's what we've been looking for. Their tech is now used for everything from auto parts to personalized football helmets. Last week, though, there was a new wrinkle. we learned that Carbon co-founder and CEO Dr. Joseph DeSimone was transitioning to executive chairman, with Ellen Coleman, the former CEO of the old DuPont, an old friend of the show, taking over as new presidency of Carbon. That's quite an endorsement, one that suggests that this company is entering the next stage of its growth trajectory. Let's dig deeper with Dr. DeSimone and Ms. Coleman. Get a better read on what's happening here, the leadership transition, and what's the future for Carbon. Thank you so much to both of you for coming on. This is very exciting to have both of you. Ellen, you're a big-time CEO, so what attracts you to this private company that's just on the launching pad?
Well, right after I left DuPont, I got a call from a board member at Carbon who said, I want you to come out and see this technology. First thing I did was check Joe DeSimone through with the researchers at DuPont.
Okay.
They said he was the real deal. Went out, fell in love with the technology, really feel, all my years of manufacturing, really feel that this technology could really bridge to a digital manufacturing platform and do so at a scale and a cost that was relevant in manufacturing. And so joined their board, and I've spent the last 3.5 years there, and this transition came up. I thought it was a great opportunity.
Okay, so Joe, we talk about at scale and actually real product, and we've got some here. Maybe you can just point them out, what this one does, because it seems pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's a fully bioabsorbable material we're doing in partnership with J&J and many other companies. So this is a digitally printable material that serves a mechanical function in the body, but after a few months is fully bioabsorbed and transitions to your own tissue.
That's extraordinary. And then this has been approved.
No, it's on its way. It's on its way, but we've been working with J&J for now.
And what are some of the body parts that it's worked well
on? Well, so the plan is in surgical applications to help you post-surgery, maintaining structure. We also think it's available for linking nerves back together.
Which has never been able to be done.
Shoulder repair, meshes, all sorts of applications.
Oh, my God, that would be the holy grail.
Yeah.
So I could see why someone like you, who understands both healthcare, understands enzymes, understands things that are really pretty ethereal, would be attracted to this.
Well, I mean, think about application development. That's something that DuPont honed over decades.
Right.
And this is absolutely a wonderful platform. The front end of it has to be applying it in ways that you optimize that model, and you can really get that scale and get up that curve very quickly.
Wow. Now, Alan Mulally's on your board, too. He's an old friend of the show from when he was at Ford. I see you've doing some business with Ford, but also Lamborghini, which I think has maybe the greatest engineering in the world. So what is your role there?
So what's awesome is, you know, traditionally, polymeric parts are molded and casted, injection molding.
Right.
That's a $300 billion market mm-hmm. that is really cumbersome to introduce new products. We craft parts with light. We have the very first 3D printed parts ever on a production vehicle out of Detroit. Ford announced in January we've got parts on the Ford Mustang, F-150 truck, and replacement parts on the Ford Focus. We also have parts on Lamborghini. Where we're really going now is electrical connectors. Jim, electrical connectors is a $60 billion market. These are all molded. 90% of the warranty issues in cars today are electrical failures. 90% of those are caused by failed connectors. Our partners, our customers, now have designs that are twice as good that they've ever seen from molded designs. And so it really opens up new waves of product innovation.
That's great. Now, Ellen, is your view that that this is one of those companies where you could see it come public one day, or have you had enough of that after the last thing?
Well, I tell you, I think the fun's going to be in building it out.
Okay.
And those decisions are down the road. But if you think about where we started with Adidas, and you think about the performance factors that went into the creation of that midsole. And now we're taking that and we've parlayed that into a specialized bike seat. Mm-hmm. We're working with Riddell with the helmets and moving into a broader area. Think about performance and protection as a segment.
Right.
And then application after application. We've learned so much about optimizing the front end in the file. We've learned so much about what has to happen post-processing to get a really excellent part for our customers. And it's really taking that ecosystem and that process and the digital manufacturing be at the center of it and really scaling that.
Now, we know about the 3D, not so great, and some of these other ones that kind of fallen by the wayside. But Arconic and HP have tried this, and they're still not really getting any scale. Is it because of this, the digital light synthesis, that's the difference between what they're doing and what you're doing?
Yeah, this is an area that's been around for 25, 30 years.
Right.
Right.
with always promise.
A lot of promise, but it's been a prototyping technology.
Yes.
We've cracked the code on how to do 3D printing 100 to 1,000 times faster. We've really focused on materials that have the properties to be a finished part, and we have an amazing business model, right? We have the world's first piece of manufacturing hardware ever to go out via subscription model. So it's infinitely upgradable, mm-hmm. right? We have an install base that's growing, approaching 1,000 printers globally now in 14 countries. And with that, it's got really good visibility in revenue because contracts are going beyond 3 years now.
Right.
And it becomes a really important part to future-proof people from obsolescence.
And why now, Al?
Why
now? I know
now?
That Joe's going up to executive chairman, but why get started in a whole new thing?
I mean, so I always said that if I were going to go back full-time, it had to be compelling. Okay. It had to be something that I really was passionate about. And Joe has built a phenomenal team of entrepreneurs that are just have been just tremendous to work with as a board member and even better to work with as the CEO. And I think really pulling us together in a way as we can scale, mm-hmm. I think it's just going to be a lot of fun working with Joe. Continuing to work with Joe, I think, is going to be a great opportunity.
Well, excellent. Congratulations to you
to
you.
Thank you, sir.
All right. This is a private company. That's Ellen Kullman. She's the new president and CEO of Carbon. And Joe DeSimone, who's the co-founder and executive chairman. Very exciting company. You'll see their football helmets tonight. Riddell is everywhere. That's their technology. It's inside the helmet that's really important. Mad Money's back after the break. It is time. It's time for the lightning round. Run for it. What will you say? There's something to bye. So it's done. You'll always have to be able to do it. And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready? Skate down. Time for the lightning round. Great man. Start with Ashwin in California. Ashwin.
Hey, Jim, how are you doing? Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, my pleasure.
Yep. My stock symbol is CPRT, Copart.
It is just a fantastic company. We actually recommended salvage business. We recommended it a very long time ago, and we should go back to it. It's been fantastic. It'll stay that way. That's just a great little American company, to tell you the truth. Let's go to Abraham in New York. Abraham.
Booyah, Jim. This is Abe from Brooklyn, New York. How are you?
I'm good. How about you?
Great, great. I love your show.
Thank you.
I own some shares of Sonos, man.
The stock just broke out. It just broke out. It's looking pretty darn good. I have to tell you, I'm a little confused about why it is so strong, because I don't think business is that good. But it's up 57% for the year. I would take a little off the table. Let's go to Devin in West Virginia. Devin.
Hey, Jim. Happy Thanksgiving to you and
same,
your family.
Same.
I'd like to get your take on Elastic, ticker symbol ESTC.
Oh, my God, it's just one more company that does the same thing. It does the data, digital investigation, and analysis. No, I've had it. No, not one more. I'm not going to endorse one more. I'm fed up. Let's go to now they'll be mad at me. I didn't mean that. Just a generic fed up, okay? Let's go to Kelly in Illinois. Kelly!
Hi, Jim. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm calling about TAP, Molson Coors. They're in the news reorganizing all over the place.
I'm done with them, too. I mean, they've had more than enough time to try to get this thing right, and they've not succeeded. Let's go to Ginny in Rhode Island. Ginny!
Hi, Jim.
Hi,
big
Ginny.
Big Booyahs from Barrington, Rhode Island. Love your show. And your input on the opportunities and pitfalls out there.
Thank you.
Would like your opinion today on Car Guru.
Very good.
C-A-R-G.
Which one? They're all good. Because Lithia is good, CarMax is good, AutoNation is good, and yours is good. I mean, look at that industry. That is a great industry. You have 4 for 4. Let's go to Dave in Florida. Dave.
Jimbo, how you doing?
Good. How are you, Dave?
I'm great, thanks. Costco, I've owned it for about a year and a half. She's had a good run. What do you think?
All right, here's what I want you to do. I think that it's going to mark some time. I think people are worried that it's going to be one of those big boxes that is not like Target. I think that any time the stock has been down in the last 5 years, you had to buy. But I would buy more if it came down. I would certainly not sell the stock. Let's go to Dexter in California. Dexter!
Hey, booyah, Jim. I came across this stock the other day, Pivotal Software, PVTL. Now, it did a few funky things. I'm just wondering if it has momentum for next year.
Isn't that we had a takeover situation going on there. We're moving on to the next one. We're done there. because I got a proposed deal. We're not arbitrageurs. Let's go to Dave in Illinois. Dave!
Dr. Kramer! Hey, it's up over 60% on the year. It meets the rule of 40. It's not Noterix. It's Alterix.
I like Alterix so much. AYX, remember what he said? It's Alter and AYX. I mean, that guy's a genius. We're buyers. One of my absolute favorite tech stocks. Should have bought that one instead of Silvers. And that, ladies and gentlemen, the lightning round. Is it finally time to buy some stock in
buy
Uber? This morning, the stock was down roughly 6% on the news that the ride-sharing company may lose London. Oh, boy, that's a gigantic market for Uber, with 45,000 drivers generating an immense amount of revenue. Why? Because Transport for London, the regulatory body that governs cabs in London, found that 14,000 Uber trips were driven by maybe impersonators, some of them had no insurance. I mean, it was a nightmare. But wait a second. The company says that 14,000 trips made up less than 1% of the rides they facilitated. There haven't been any recent incidents, so come on. As for the insurance issue, Uber says they've solved that, too, so they're going to appeal. Tony West, the general counsel, who is incredibly savvy, will make that case for Uber there. And in the interim, the service will still be available in London pending resolution. But it's not a slam dunk. Like most municipal regulators, Transport for London tends to protect the interests of what basically amounts to a guild of cab drivers. It's not like New York, where the medallion holders seem to have very little pull. On the other hand, this is by no means an open shut case, which is why the stock immediately bounced back, closing down just 1.5%. That's it. There's a more important reason why Uber was able to rebound. The lockup on insider selling expired nearly 3 weeks ago. This is one of the largest lockup expirations in history, if not the largest. And now most of these new shares have finally been digested, put away. Former CEO Travis Kalanick has sold nearly $1.5 billion worth of stock so far this month. Nice. Yet a lot of people cashing out. But if they're done selling, the stock can rally. I don't want any good news. Earlier this month, I told you to wade back into Lyft. Since then, the stock's climbed more than 10%. As for Uber, I told you to wait to see how the lockup expiration plays out, and that's now safely in the rearview mirror. Of course, I don't want to get too aggressive. The company itself continues to point out the things that it did wrong. But what we heard from them the last time they reported was a commitment to discipline that puts Uber in sync with well-run, publicly traded companies. It makes it feel a lot less like those overhyped, overpriced venture capital-funded private operations, many of which we saw when we were in San Francisco last week. Specifically, management talked about being willing to get out of losing markets, like their Uber Eats food delivery business that's responsible for a big chunk of the company's losses. For Uber Eats, 15% of their markets accounts for half of the unit's losses. That's incredible. And it suggests that if they simply drop those markets, or if Uber were to sell the whole business to Grubhub, you could see a gigantic jump in the stock. Unfortunately, like everyone else in the delivery business, Uber Eats is being crushed by DoorDash, which seems to have unlimited funding that allows it to endlessly lose money because it's private. If Uber were to combine Eats with Postmates or even Grubhub, taking out a competitor, that might be a big positive. Although I'm not sure the market would initially understand what's happening. Longer term, though, if the food delivery business gets rationalized the way the ride-sharing market's been rationalized with lots of dropouts lately, then you'll be able to make an actual investment case for Uber on discounted cash flow or an earnings before taxes, depreciation, and amortization 2021, not 20. It's not too long from now, though, when you think about it, the calendar about to flip. Meanwhile, Uber caught two upgrades in the last couple of weeks. One argued the stock could have roughly 90% upside. It was keen on this idea of Uber Eats going over to Grubhub, by the way. I know there's still some skepticism, tremendous skepticism. Hey, I've disliked this from day one. I was only ever really enamored of Uber Freight. The trucking business has made great strides in lowering the cost of logistics in this country. Now, though, I think Uber's management is almost done playing defense. The overhang over insider selling is behind them. That's why I am betting the stock can go higher from here, which is why it is time, particularly after that bounce off the London low, to do some buying in the stock of Uber. So stick with Kramer. All right, let's go over tonight. HPE, disappointing revenues. People aren't going to like that. Nutanix with a very strong quarter. PVH, we continue to like it. There's going to be some profit taking after that very big run. But remember when Manny Chirico bought that stock? You want to be with him, not against him. Like I said, there's always a bull market summer. Promise I'll find it just for your radio man money. I'm Jim Cramer, and I will see you tomorrow.